This week on the Ocean Cruisers podcast, I'm having a chat with Captain Ryan Rayfield, who is the founder of the offshore sailing school, Sail Libra. Myself and Ryan became acquainted through some mutual friends who've sailed with him on some of his offshore courses. He comes from Alabama originally, doing day charters there, and has since travelled the world and clocked up miles in setting his sailing school up. He offers passages all over the Caribbean and east coast of the States that are suitable for beginners and more experienced sailors also. If you want to join Ryan on Sail Libra, reference promo code OCP, Ocean Cruisers Podcast, and you'll get 10% off the bill. This year, the Odyssey Sailing Festival is taking place in Greece in September. We have a range of incredible skippers from all over the world and also a celebrity chef from Below Deck called Marcos, who will be joining us and sailing with Glenn. If you'd like tickets, visit theoceancruisers.com/odyssey. But for now, enjoy the podcast with Ryan of Sail Libra.
There's a bunch of them that, you know, I go and look at your Instagram where you announce all of them. I'm like, oh, I've seen them. I know them. We've met. So I go down the list. Like, I talked to Duca and Roberta just like a week and a half ago because I'm in Grenada where they spend a lot of time down here. So sure. Just getting and feeling things out. But yeah. And then also there was another, you know, that kind of double murder that happened here. I don't know if you've heard about that.
The one yeah, shit, so, I have. Yeah. What's right. it like so on the ground there?
It's, I mean, we know that, you know, people don't run amok escaping prisons all the time, right? Hmm. So it just was a bad circumstance, you know, the way that, you know, when somebody doesn't have an option. And that's not typical to cruising, right? So this was just, it could have been a carjacking. It really could have been anything. Yeah. It just so happens that it was in our backyard and it just kind of sucks. But nice. On the ground, as far as what people are doing here, I mean, there's not any kind of heightened security or anything like that. It's just, you know, kind of a grim, you know, and I haven't done the cruisers net in the morning or anything because my head's usually stuck in a hole, but it's not bad, but you don't want to act like it's just great. I feel like, you know, yeah. like you're off at the beach and these people just got axed. Would be kind of bad.
I mean, it's so rare, you know, like, and the thing is, like, if you were to live in, like, you know, Chicago or Washington, D.C. or London, like, this would just be every other Tuesday afternoon. So, like, you can understand it's not something that doesn't happen all the time everywhere.
Sure. Yeah, and we sleep with our boat wide open, just like most people, right? Never even think about anything like that. But, you know, if you're in a catamaran like those people were and, if somebody pins you in one of those pontoons, there ain't a whole lot of getting out, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's rough. Have you got like an arsenal on your boat, like ready for deployment should this happen? Because I'm thinking of like loading up a bit this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we keep flare guns and I got a, my favorite thing is my, you know, my island intruder, you know.
That is very nice. But, that was more quite a lot of people.
This is just more like for coconuts, but you know, whatever.
Could be used as a useful deterrent.
Yeah, it could be a deterrent, right? That's kind of like the Crocodile Dundee movie.
Yeah. What are you allowed under code? Like, because your boat's like, you know, registered as a business because of all the passages that you take your customers on. Like, what are you allowed to keep on? Or what are you allowed to do? Is there like laws that like only permit you to defend your vessel in a certain way because you're a
commercial vessel. I think if, you know, well, I am a commercial vessel, but there's no, the U.S. Coast Guard doesn't have any weapons laws. Right. Only because, for example, a deep sea fishing charter, right, may have a gun on board just to actually kill a fish that you can't shoot, you know, that you can't hit with a bat because it's just too big, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes they do, you know, shoot animals on board commercial vessels only to get them to stop flopping around. It's part of the job. But as far as I know, I don't know of any commercial regulations that prevent U.S. vessels. Now, there may be, but I haven't ever really had to look into it, right? This is not something that we would typically even try to discuss. And then the guns on boats and then all that stuff, I let everybody have their own conversations about those. I don't know, because that one gets eaten to death there.
Yeah, if you want to like spur a real debate between American cruisers, talk about guns on boats. That gets nasty. Boats, right. Like ASAP, it gets nasty.
Exactly. It only takes just about a little less than a minute.
It's a weird one because, like, I was talking to a friend from Florida, and he had a bunch of weed on his boat, which is harming very few people, and that would get completely confiscated off you. But if you've got, like, a semi-automatic rifle,
Right,
like,
yeah,
no issue.
exactly. Yeah, no issue there. Yeah, and it in the Caribbean, every island that you pass, it kind of smells like weed most of the time anyway. So that's not a problem down, not a problem
What are you
down
doing
here.
with
But
it?
yeah, exactly. I guess they just burn fields of it here. It just constantly smells like weed in most places that you go.
Yeah, mate. So just briefly explain so everyone knows, like, because we just brushed on it then. Like, what is your business and what do you do?
So. Sail Libra started in I bought this boat, and when I say this boat, Libra, which is what I'm aboard right now, it's a
Ship.
1969 Bill Tripp Jr. Custom 60, and it was built in 1968 69, so
I didn't
it's
think it was
like
that
50,
old.
54 years old, right? And
Well,
so my job basically is to keep it on top of the water all like every day. Every
yeah.
day is a battle, right? Because it's just an old boat. The bones are old, but everything else has been redone, refurbished.
Yeah.
I'm on my third galley, just because it gets
Oh,
ransacked and used so much. We do so much cooking in there.
yeah.
But we basically bought the boat in 13, did a 2-year refit, and then ran the Gulf of Mexico doing, passage training between Pensacola, Florida, and Cancun or Isla Mujeres, Mexico. And that's about a 650-mile offshore run. I mean, they do a race every other
Nice.
year from Pensacola, and then out of St. Pete, they do a race also to that location. But in 15, when we started, they actually had the first race to Havana, which for Americans going to Cuba has been kind of locked down for a while. I mean,
What's the
there's
deal
ways
with
to.
that? Like, can Americans go there now, or is there like embargoes and restrictions and stuff again?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different ways to go to Cuba if you want to fly on a commercial plane, but the Coast Guard stopped letting Americans take their private vessels. So you can't
Right.
take your boat, and then the FAA says you can't take your plane. But you can fly on
Right.
Delta, or you can fly on, a commercial carrier. You just
Right,
can't take
okay.
your own home there. And that was what kind of got lifted back in 2015 for quite a while, for several years, was those restrictions were listed. There was like 10 or 12 different ways that you could get a permit to go. But besides that, I mean, that was a great place, but that was the first time that this boat had really ever been on an offshore passage, with clients, was that first race to Havana from Pensacola. And we actually
Nice.
ended up, winning our class, even though, this was a lot of guys that were first time really traveling international out of Pensacola. So it was really just a race to get there, right? So the seriousness of the sailboat race amongst the racers was there, but amongst the cruisers like myself, we were just going to Havana. You know,
Have a cup of
the
tea.
event was, an excuse to be able to get to go to Havana.
Mate, that I don't think I've ever spoke to anyone who's actually been there, or no one I can recall having a conversation with. So that's a
Yeah,
different thing. What's it like?
we did it about 12 different times. So
No way.
that the 15 was the first one, and 18 was the last one. So in that 3-year period, I went basically 4 times a year. It's a very interesting country to check in and out of. Movement within, the coastline. You have to check out of one town into the next. But we actually didn't
No
cruise the coast a whole lot. Basically, 100% of our time was spent at Marina Hemingway, just kind of west of Havana.
Right,
It's
okay.
probably, 5 miles or 6 miles out of town. It's a really nice marina. It's one of the dynamite marinas, where they just basically blast canals in the
Yeah.
reef, and then it floods it in. And so when you get in, it's kind of tight and it's very gridded out, but it's a nice marina, and plenty of security, and I never felt unsafe or anything like that in Cuba. But
Nice.
it went through stages. So there would be area, times when I would go, the marina was full of boats because it was allowed again. And then toward the end, when things started getting a little more pressure politically, I guess, if that's, there was a lot less boats. And then the Coast Guard stopped issuing permits altogether. So now the marina is empty again. And in the anticipation of hopefully having some of those restrictions lifted, there was other towns on the northern coast of Cuba that they started putting in big marinas and things like that. Well, they're kind of, except for foreign boats, they're kind of, they were doing it for the American draw, right? To have
Of
people come
course.
down to these new marinas. But I think that they're probably overbuilt for the amount of traffic that they're now getting. But all of this stuff will eventually go away, right? I mean, it's been like 50 or 60 years of this embargo stuff. It's
Was
at
going to
some
say
point,
hopefully, but it's got
yeah,
no
at some
sign of doing
point.
so yet.
But in my personal opinion, not that I really know anything about politics, it's going to be hard to just say, okay, we've lifted the restrictions, and then all of a sudden there's a million American tourists the next day that want to go see Cuba. It would overrun or kind of overload their tourist industry really fast, just because they have never had to kind of have enough facilities for that many people. So I think that when they, having to have a permit to go is a way to kind of slowly introduce a population of tourists to the area, just because we're so close, and it's a beautiful island. I mean, like, it's the largest island in the Caribbean, and it's kind of off limits to Americans. Everybody else is fine, but and I just, feel lucky that I was able to go those on all those trips. And I was running out of doing my passages from basically South Alabama, which is Orange Beach, Alabama, but it's right next door to Pensacola, Florida, which is on the
Nice.
panhandle. Most people have heard of Pensacola, so I kind of say, well, we run Pensacola to, Havana, because really, realistically, I have to go down the Intercoastal Waterway, and that's where I get out. So the bridges are too short in my town to get out into the Gulf, so I have to go down the ICW to be able to jump out and get. And then that's that, I think it's 650 miles or 600 miles from there to Havana. But it's a great spot. They have lots of interesting stories there. We couldn't cover all of them in 2 or 3 hours. It would be a whole another episode.
Havana or the ICW? I think you mean Havana.
Yeah, Havana. Yeah, I mean, great, great
The
spot. Lots of fun.
ICW's got some good spots.
Yeah, the ICW has a very good spot. So there are. Most people find them because they go around and got to back up. That's the interesting spots on the ICW are shallow spots normally.
I don't think my boat would actually be very useful going down the ICW. Got like a 20 meter mast.
Yeah, at 70 feet, you're kind of clipped. So 70, 72 feet, which is where you're sitting at right now. See, so Libra is 71 from the water. Because of the catch rig, I have a little bit, shorter
Little bit
masts,
less.
for a comparable size sloop. And that allows me to do some of the ICW, but there's still some shorter bridges, especially on the northern Gulf Coast.
I can't imagine I'd ever need to go up it. But from what I know, people who've like navigated the coast, it's a safer option in some cases, I've heard.
Yeah, so in the Gulf of Mexico and honestly the East Coast of the United States, it prevents people from having to go offshore, right? So the ICW is
So
like
you
a
can
kind of like a
motor
ditch. Yeah, and that's what most people end up doing. You're not necessarily going to sail the ICW unless all things are perfect. And then if
I was
something gets
going to
away,
say,
yeah,
the wind would have to be very
and
much on his
yeah,
side.
exactly. And then if something were to happen, because you're kind of sailing in this ditch. If you were to get a weird gust or something, it only, 5 seconds later, you're in the bushes
You're in dirt.
or aground, right? So most people do, they just kind of motor down, and what they'll do is they'll sail the bays in between. So like, coming down the East Coast, once you get to the Chesapeake, the intercoastal just runs
Opens
through there,
up.
but it's a big open spot. So, that's when people get to sail and go explore a little bit. But, the migration path of, the New Englanders that basically go to escape the winter is pretty full in late summer and fall. Like by October or by Halloween, everybody's pretty much vacated and already headed south, all just like ducks.
See, it does seem like a migration. Like
Yeah, it
I
really is,
follow, a few sailors on Instagram, and it's like everyone's posting the same photos of the same anchorages and stuff like
Exactly. Yeah,
that.
here we go through the city. Here, everybody's leaving Maine or whatever they were doing for the summer months, which is nice. But yeah, getting down the ICW is typically not a problem on a a normal size cruising boat with a 5 to 6 foot draft. There's gonna be spots that may look a little shallow, but you can more than likely go ahead and get through. I mean, there's barges and tugs and stuff that take it too.
Yeah, I
So.
suppose I'll be weighing up those options when the time comes.
Yeah.
Right, mate, what how did you start doing this? So like how old are you, and like when did you actually get this boat, like at what point in your life? Because this
Yeah,
is a
so
massive business that you've got in terms of like the amount of work you need to do for it.
Yeah, there is a lot of prep and a lot of work in this. The other so my career that I chose when I was young was computers. So I was a computer science guy. Had a job at Delta Airlines. I was in the airline industry for about 10 years and
Nice.
loved it, right? And that was very awesome. It allowed me to travel the world for standby, right? And got to visit a lot of tropical places. Ended up using that flight benefit to go get on boats and help with deliveries. And this is kind of before Crew Finder and before the internets and before all this stuff where people could collaborate so much and say, hey, I'd
What
love
year was
somebody to help
this?
me. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, so the internet like just started, kind of.
Well, I mean, yeah, but just there was no smartphone, right? If you wanted to do something, you had
No,
to go to your computer.
let's go to
You had to go to an
the
actual screen to do it. So I've tried to over the past few years, after my Delta, and I moved to Orange Beach, Alabama, which is a coastal city. It's a beautiful area. It's just like Pensacola or Destin, Florida, or Panama City Beach. There's a northern Gulf Coast, and Alabama has about 30 miles of that coastline. A lot of people don't even realize that
That's what I was
Alabama
going to
has
ask.
a coast, right? Yeah,
I didn't think
exactly. It's
Alabama
like,
was one of the border states or something. I thought it was higher up.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida all have a stake on the Gulf Coast. And
You've
we
got
have
30
Mobile.
miles of it.
Yeah, we have 30 miles of it, which we have 30 miles of nice. So nice beaches. And the nice beaches really kind of start in Alabama. So what I did when I moved to the beach,
So you
after
can
my
cruise
Delta
Alabama
career,
in your sailboat.
you can go to Alabama in your sailboat. It's now most of it's
Amazing.
inside the ICW. So you have to have that, that mass restriction is there to be able to get
So
in
I
and out, right? Yeah, you
can't
got it. Yeah, what the areas that you would be able to go to would be like Pensacola
go.
and then Mobile Bay, which not very many cruisers go to. They're coming out of it. And those are the great loopers, right? The people that go all the way around the Great Lakes, Chicago, and come down the Mississippi River or the Ohio River system, whatever path they take, they'll usually end up in Mobile Bay, which is Alabama. But I mean, it's a nice area, but the water's not like it is here in the Caribbean for sure. It's just, it's just kind of muddy and shallow, and but it's nice. So I lived in a really big tourist area. When I was working at Delta, I purchased a 37-foot Irwin Center cockpit, and this was like a really just plain cruising sailboat that,
Yeah, but they're pretty.
yeah, they're pretty. They really are, but they weren't built for offshore. They were built to go to the Bahamas. This thing had a 4 and a foot, a 4 and a half foot draft, so like 1.5 meters or so. So a shallow draft, and that's what they sold this boat. This boat was a Bahamas boat, so people could go bounce around the Bahamas and kind of stay in that protected lake area where you don't get a lot of conditions, right? And the boat was set up perfect for that. It was also from 1974, so is an older production boat. And so I had my license to run charters, and I decided to use that boat and just create a day sail business. So, take the family out, right? Take someone's family out. I always did private trips. So I would take mom and dad and 2 4-year-olds, right? For 2 hours to go sail around and look for the dolphins. Something that you would do when you're on vacation, right? So an
So, how much would you
activity.
charge for that? I mean, bear in mind, this is like the 2000s you were saying.
Yeah, this is early 2000. So it was about, I mean, roughly the boat ran for about $125 an hour. So a 2 hour trip would be 250, right? A 4 hour trip would be 450. So, and then a sunset cruise was about 2 hours, a little over, and I would 375.
Something just collapsed
The
in
yeah, the yeah, the boat.
the
So the boat's
Sweating back,
rocking
mate.
right now. I don't know if you can see lights moving around, but the boat's rocking on that.
Screw the
Something's
backup
gonna
lighting.
crash. Right. Yeah, we'll screw that down later. So anyway, I created that business, and that business lasted, I ran that from like 2007 till really 2018,
Wow.
because it was about 10 years. And toward the
Nice.
end, I did both boats. So when I owned both boats at the same time, this one I was doing Havana and Cuba in the winter, and then I would do Mexico in the winter. These are trips that I can do from the northern Gulf Coast that are passage worthy, because the
Yeah.
Gulf of Mexico in the wintertime is no joke.
It's a bit spicy, isn't it?
It really no different than in the Med in the way, it gets nasty, right? These storms come down, it blows 40 knots for a few days, and it really churns it up out there. So once you get off in the middle, then yeah, it definitely gets rough. And that's then in the summertime, the Gulf is almost off limits because of hurricane season.
Yeah.
I mean, where it's that's kind of like at the end of the bowling alley. Give me a second. I got to cover this port light up, or I'm going to blind myself.
Don't know what, I can't imagine where that's. Oh, it's from a port light in front of you.
Yeah, there's a port light behind the. It just so happens that the boat's swaying.
Boat's just spinning round there, mate. Our
Yeah,
houses move
just
all the
yeah, houses move all the time.
time.
There we go. That should be a little better once that falls over.
Yeah. That's good lighting, actually, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
So the day sail industry was really good to me. There wasn't a whole lot of competition in the area as far, there wasn't 50 other boats doing what I was doing. The market just couldn't handle it.
So this is
And
in Alabama.
this is in Alabama. And believe
Right.
it or not, I know probably a lot of your viewers will comment on this podcast, but Alabama is where the middle of America vacations.
What
So
does that mean, the middle? Oh, the states in the
of the
middle.
states, yeah. So
Ah,
kind of
right.
the, yeah, it's like Iowa over Oklahoma, Missouri, a lot of the area, a lot of the states that are kind of in the middle, this is the closest nice beach to them.
No way.
So the Atlantic beaches aren't that nice, right?
Yeah.
The water is just not that clear. But when you get to the Gulf Coast, they call it the Emerald Coast. The water now has a nice little green tint to it. It's very clear. People go deep sea fishing, they dive, they sail.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things that happen in kind of this tourist area during the summer. Now in the winter, everybody's back home, right? So the place just dies out. But in the
Right,
summer,
okay.
it's very busy because school's out. It's a big family place. People bring their children down there. It's a safe beach. It's usually calm in the summer. The water's nice, is really the draw. And then their drive, even though, like in Europe, if you had to drive 10 hours to get somewhere, that's forever. But people
Yeah.
drive 10, 12 hours to get to the beach all the time in the States. So they choose not to go further down the coast to Panama
For
City for
real? Like people will
whatever
drive 10
reasons.
hours to go to a beach.
I know,
Really?
right? I laugh about that too sometimes. I'm like,
Obviously,
just
very
move.
passionate about the activity. I wouldn't
Well,
drive
they
10 hours
just,
for anything.
I know. I know. And here I am saying that, right? And I'm constantly on the move at 7 miles an hour and do, sometimes I do 2,000 miles a month.
That's different.
It's very different. But yeah, so Alabama is definitely a vacation destination for a lot of the people in the middle of the country. So you could say that the
That.
northern Gulf Coast, right? Alabama, where Orange Beach and Gulf Shores are, over to Pensacola Beach, and then Destin, Florida is just right next door to Pensacola and Fort Walton, and then you have Panama City Beach, and that kind of covers everything. But the further east that you go, at least back when I was growing up and as a kid, so Panama City Beach, Florida was kind of spring break, a little bit more rowdy,
Yeah.
more kid type activities, or
Right.
teenage or college type activities, not necessarily families with small kids. So the further west you go from Panama City, the more family friendly it became over time.
Okay.
If that makes any sense without. I'm trying to think of a way to word that that doesn't make it sound like Panama City is a college town still, Because I think they've been trying to lose that, reputation, like
Lose
a
that. So, where
Daytona
is that
Beach.
Panama City in like relation? Because I've never heard of Panama City, Florida.
Panama City, Florida is a huge spring break and summer destination for a lot of people.
Right.
They've shot MTV shows there, and it's just a it was the college spring break, like the if you saw a typical American movie and you saw a spring break beach scene,
Probably
that's what
there.
everybody's kind of thinking about, right? That lay it out, sunny, big beaches, nice water, that type of thing. But yeah, and that's
Okay.
so this is all the Gulf Coast, the Atlantic Coast, Daytona Beach, and all these other things, Miami. Completely different people, completely different crowd, but
Yeah.
the Northern Gulf Coast is really nice. There's a lot of people I don't know, it's millions and millions.
Yeah, that's my so like Alabama has like beachfront ocean holiday resorts.
Yes, mainly condos, right? So you would do an
Right.
Airbnb or you're
Yeah, a
renting from an
resort.
from an owner. But as far as like hotels or like all-inclusive resorts or something like that, those don't really exist a lot. It's mainly you go there and you rent a condo,
Because his
you
family's going there on
because it's
vacation,
families.
so
It, exactly. It's
exactly.
not necessarily a couple's destination unless it's kind of early in the season, in the spring where there's no families there, or late in the fall after school's back. And then that's when,
Right.
you might take your spouse down, hang out at the beach, but it's still mostly condos.
Nice. Where are you from? Because you've got a bit of like a southern accent, I suppose, haven't you?
Well, I am from Alabama. I grew up in
Right.
central Alabama, just
Right.
probably about 4.5 hours north of the coast.
Okay.
And I grew up on a lake, Lake Martin, which
Lake
is a big
Martin.
lake in the state. And that's kind of where I learned to sail and boat. And I mean, I've been on a boat since, I mean, honestly, since I can remember. There's pictures of me with my dad, in like a what we would call a fishing boat or a bass boat, like a
Yeah.
motor on the back with a little trolling motor on the front, where you can kind of fish around the shoreline and catch fish for fun. And so
Nice.
that was kind of how I grew up. And then a Sunfish was my first sailboat, and that I kind of found it, on the lake. Couldn't really find its owner, so the only thing it had was the board itself, and the mast was kind of laid across the deck of it. It
Right.
didn't have a tiller, didn't have a center board. It didn't have all the things that you needed to sail. So I ended up like getting
Okay.
getting a stick and making a boom and like cutting one of my dad's good tarps, right? So he's like, "What are you doing cutting my tarp into a triangle?" I was like, "Well, because that's what a sailboat looks like in a picture, right?" And sunfish sailboats don't really have a triangle sail, and they definitely don't have a jib. But I was able to make this really kind of archaic looking Tom Sawyer type sailboat and sail it,
Downwinder.
sail it around the lake. And, it would probably was a little comical to the people that were watching me do it, but it's just a kid playing outside, right? I was up until I
Yeah.
was about 14 years
On a
old,
stolen boat.
basically on a stolen boat that I kind
Yeah.
of found back up in a washed up on the shoreline. Anytime we would have a flood, it would go up in people's yards and float tree limbs and debris. And apparently this boat was just pulled up on the beach somewhere and it floated away. But none of the good stuff was left with it.
It's
Yeah,
quite
just a
interesting
yeah.
that
A mast and
that's where your career
basically a
started.
surfboard. Yeah, that's exactly how it started. I when I worked in Delta, I was in Thailand for quite a while, and I sailed there, moved boats around between
Very
Thailand and
nice.
Langkawi in Malaysia.
Oh, cool place.
And that was really learning, right? So that was me just observing, right? I wasn't hired anything to be on a boot. I was begging, basically begging to get on a boot just to
Yeah.
have the experience and really to get out of the city. I was kind of in Bangkok doing some work stuff. But I would go down to the southern coast, which was at the time was Phuket, where it still is, but it's not as, I mean, it was busy when I was there as a early 20s person, which would be early 2000s. But it's like a city now. I mean, it's just massive sprawl. I met my wife there, ex-wife now. But anyway, we were married for 14 years. She was from Thailand, that area, and I got two beautiful children out of it. It's just the best thing ever. I really have a big connection to Thailand and the
Oh, I love
sailing.
it.
And that's kind of like what got me into the sailing industry was I
So did you
realized
sail a
that
lot around Thailand?
kind of
Okay.
because I was moving boats between there and Langkawi as a volunteer, we
Yeah.
would sail down the coast, and this thing's, it's only like an overnight sail. So it's
Yeah.
not a very a far journey or anything, but yeah, we were kind of down the coast. But being able to actually go and enjoy sailing around the Phuket area, I never really did that. It was
Have you
on the
ever had the
boat. It
opportunity
was on
to
a
do
boat.
that yet?
Not as an adult. So
Oh
yeah, I
man, you
would
got to
plan
get
to come
there.
back. Well, yeah, I'm never going to get there. I'm not an adult yet. I've been trying for about tw I've been
Yeah,
trying for like 20 something years to become an adult, and I've just kind of given up. They say that you can either choose
that's
to be a
it.
sailor or choose to be an adult, and I guess I chose to be a sailor instead. So
Who said that?
I don't know. It's a saying.
This is
Who
so.
whoever
Oh, a lot of people have
whoever
said
said it,
it.
yeah, wh whoever said it, I give them props, but it wasn't me. But yeah, it's
Yeah, I was going to
probably on
say.
one of those T-shirts, right? You just see them randomly on the internet. It
Yeah,
says,
maybe the
"Yeah, when I
bumper
grow up,
sticker on the back of a
yeah,
boat.
exactly. Yeah, when I grow up, I'm going to be a sailor because I chose not to be an adult."
What are your aspirations for cruising? Because the business that you're running now is serving like offshore passage customers who want to learn how to,
Right.
I
So yeah,
suppose,
so we
cruise the world
do.
themselves. But like, where do you want to go? What do you want to do outside of work?
So, outside of work, I spend a lot of time, or we're going to use the word free time very loosely
Right.
because I don't get a whole lot of that. But when I do have free time or downtime between passages, I do like to do a little carpentry work. So,
Nice.
and that helps with the interior of their boat. And it doesn't mean that I'm always working on the boat. I mean, I'm not carving out, spoons or flutes or anything either. I mean, if I'm doing carpentry, it's probably something on the boat or a knickknack shelf or something like that. And so
Yeah.
that's just kind of an outside hobby. My goals for later in life with this business, and because it's hard to separate my business life and my personal life because they're so intertwined.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
I live at the office, basically, right? It really is the same thing. And then I get to enjoy these, like I'm in Grenada, right now between trips, which was the whole reason that I was able to even, send you a message and say, "Hey, I'm available. I've stopped moving for a moment, so maybe I can sit down and gather my thoughts." But being able to be in a nice, tranquil place and have downtime is my goal.
Yeah.
So my goal for life is to relax more. Because I stay wound up a lot, right? I mean, I'm either like provisioning, planning, everything that most people take a year to do to get their boat ready to go somewhere. I do it sometimes 20 times a year.
Yeah.
The year before last or last year, we ran 21 passages, and that's a lot. I mean, it's a
Shit.
lot of miles covered. But we also, so we do the two different types of trips. We do cruiser training, which is mainly down in the Caribbean. And then we do the offshore passages to, during COVID, we had trips to nowhere because we couldn't even check into other countries. It was just, it was difficult to run a travel business during COVID where you had, where my basic goal is to go to a whole nother country, right? That's the basis of my
Yeah.
business is to do passages. And, with the, all of the restrictions and then the quarantine times and processes where I just turn and where I turn and burn, right? I mean, I have had trips where we'll go from St. Thomas to Grenada, which is about 450 miles. It's not a, it is a long passage, but it's very, very doable in about 3 days and have a basically a 0 day turnaround time where we basically touch the dock, we say goodbye to those people, spend the night. The next group arrives and we're off. We're
Yeah.
going back north. So a lot of these areas that I get to visit in the Caribbean, we're only there for a few days. That's why here in Grenada, this trip, I am
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
because you would have had
12,
to have done like boat quarantines and stuff, wouldn't you?
oh yeah, back during COVID. Yeah, because that eliminated it. So Grenada was, I don't want to say it was one of the worst, but it was one of the most restricted as far as entering the country. They wanted you to come in, put your pew flag up, announce that you're there on the radio, and then sit on your boat for 7 days. before you even came to check in. So what, I mean, you know, how I said you can't, there's no way to kind of map that into a business. I mean, I don't want to spend a week
Just
with,
have to
you know,
trust our
have,
leaders, mate. Just
yeah,
trust
I
them.
know, yeah, let's just see. And
Just trust them.
it's a, exactly, and that's never where we go. Yeah, you know, we don't typically talk politics or religion on a trip because those are the
Well, one of those
two
is definitely out
things.
of
Yeah,
the
one of those is going to cause somebody to probably, you know, people that typically get along no matter what, you can find a way to disagree when you start talking about politics or religion. So we leave those off the table on every trip.
Well, immigration is just like part of a cruiser's daily life, and like it's so
Yeah.
invested in like party politics, like it's
Yes.
impossible to like not
It is,
Getting
and I'm
arguments with people about it, because
right.
inevitably it leads down to, oh, do you not care about people? It's like, no, that's not what anyone's saying.
Right. And you know, I've been checking in and out of countries now for 10 years solid. I mean, you know, and when I worked for Delta, I traveled extensively and lived in Europe, and I was basically a traveling computer technician. So I was in and out of all these countries all the time, but not necessarily in the Caribbean. They've got a process that's pretty easy. You know, a lot of them use an application called SailClear, where you can basically do it before you go in. And you know, lots of other easy applications that have been discussed extensively, I'm sure. But the one country that I don't like going to and checking into is my own. So when I go back to the States and I have to clear U.S. Customs and Immigration, just to me, the way that I feel about it, I always feel like, and these are just the officers probably that I get. I feel like I'm being scrutinized, like I'm guilty when I show up, you know. So
And
then
you have
they're
long
just,
hair and a beard.
yeah, exactly. I mean, I look
Yeah,
like
with a
a
target,
preacher, you
mate.
know. Yeah,
You
exactly.
look like a preacher
So
or like a
yes, yeah.
pirate.
So yeah, coming back into the States typically is a longer process for most cruisers, and then anyone that's not a U.S. citizen, you can fly in without, you know, a lot of European countries, we have ESTA visas and things like that, which allow you to arrive unannounced via plane or ferry. But you can't just bring your own boat in. You have to have a special visa for that to arrive on your own boat.
That's a
Now
headache,
there's,
I've heard.
it is, and there's a lot of ways, or there's not a lot of ways. The way around it is to buy a ticket to the States, check in, you get your ESTA, you go back. And you bring your boat in. And as long as your ESTA is active for that, I don't remember how many days it is. 60 or 90 days is what they give most people, I think, on their ESTA. It's still valid if, even when you come in by boat. So when they pull you up in the system, it's already been activated. And there's
So
also,
they're
you know,
more bothered about the people arriving without permission than a boat arriving,
exactly.
kind of.
And you know, they'll actually. Yeah, they fine you if you arrive unannounced. You know, I think that Bobby on Sailing Doodles went from the DR to Puerto Rico one time, and if I'm remembering the correct channel, and he had a couple of Europeans on with him. They didn't have a visa. They were just going to enter the States like they normally would, right, with an ESTA, and that they fined him. It was like over $1,000 or something like that. I think I remember seeing it. In Puerto Rico, when they came and checked in, you know, everything's fine with the boat and the Americans. It was the two Europeans that didn't have a visa. Now, if they'd arrived by plane or by ferry, no problem. So I don't understand the fines and things like that. And that's why I say that coming into my own country is typically the worst. A lot of
I
people skip the States altogether. You know, there's coming into the U.S. Virgin Islands, it's America. So you have to go through the same processes there too. So a lot of people go to the BVI and they'll be in the BVI, but they never bring their boat to the USVI.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, it's just a lot easier to get into as well. I was watching a documentary on it because obviously, like, everyone's talking about the illegal immigration stuff in America now. But they were saying how hard it is for Canadians to get into America, which was pretty funny. They were saying like
I know.
it's so easy if you come from like any country in the world, but Canadians are just treated horribly.
I just, you know, it's like I have a lot of Canadian clients, and you know, one of the first that I took out years and years ago, he was a like a security guard at a prison out in Canada, and then my first response
Didn't know they needed
was,
them in Canada.
I didn't even know they had prisons. Right? I mean,
So
like,
nice people.
they're such nice people. They have prisons in their country. So then I was real curious about his job. I was like, what do they live and do? What do you have to do to go to jail in Canada? You know, so, but yeah, he was a security prison, you know, a prison prisoner in Canada, and my first response was, they have prisons in Canada?
You don't
Because in the
hear much
States,
about the
they're very,
prison
no.
industrial complex in Canada, do you? It can be a
Not
big
as much,
thing.
yeah, not as much as you do in the States, you know. We definitely have our
No,
prisons
not as
for
much
sure.
cash in
So,
that.
nope, not at all. Not at all. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, my trips and clients, you know, range from all over the place and all walks of life. But for generally, like most people that want to come on a passage on Libra, they come in like three different kinds of people. You know, people that have been watching YouTube too long that know it's for them and they want to test out their, you know, before they go make dumb decisions, right? Because they're seasick the whole time or something like that. They want to come spread their wings on Libra. This kind of a, you show up, it's a ready to go boat, everything's there. And then it's not
And they
necessarily a
can
ride.
participate however they want.
Yeah, I mean, there's a watch, we have a watch rotation, which you're a part of. So when you sign up, you know that you're coming along as a paying crew. That you're not coming along as a spectator where somebody's going to bring you a drink on the deck. Probably.
You
Now,
know, I went to there earlier, right?
in saying that, I am very lucky to have you know, an awesome mate, and she's from Holland, and she works in the Caribbean with me, and she would probably bring you a drink on the deck if you asked for it. She's so nice. But she's, you know, she's in charge of those creature comforts, and she makes food and things like that. Beautiful stuff. You can look at, you know, some of the Instagram things. There's
I've
just
had
beautiful
friends send me
pictures of the food that
photos.
she made. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, there's beautiful stuff out there that she does. So you're definitely not going to go hungry on this boat. But what I've learned over the years in running these trips is you don't really want to throw somebody that's from Kansas in the galley in 6 foot seas with a knife, right?
For so many
So,
reasons.
for a lot of reasons. And there's definitely been a lot of trips that I've run solo, right? So like John Kretschmer, you know, he's always run his trips solo. He has you know, a little bit smaller boat, but as far as having a mate that kind of cooks and kind of takes care of the common areas and kind of tries to help you with your stuff, you know, he's always done it solo. And I mean,
Yeah, fair
props
play
to
to
him,
him as
man.
well. Yeah,
It
that's
it's
hard.
hard. Yeah, it is hard to do that. And having a mate makes it so much easier. And it makes it so much easier too for me with I know that the clients enjoy it only because they're not eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day. You know, there's actually a nice cooked meal or breakfast or something like that. Now, if the conditions are really bad, you know, we open our snack drawer and that's dinner.
Biscuits.
Yeah, exactly. But I've seen my mate Sonny cook, and you know, we're falling off of 10 foot seas, and her feet are coming off the ground, and the galley and the stoves all over the place, and she's chasing stuff all over the counter. It can get very real out there sometimes. So the people that
Pretty
come with me,
versatile
yeah,
chef to be like a chef on a
it,
passage
it,
baking boat.
it exactly. You know, and I digress, right? I'll go all over the place if you don't herd me in somewhere. But you know, just those types of clients, right? So there's the guys that have a boat and they've been prepping it to get ready to go somewhere. And so now they're looking to get maybe some offshore time, but because maybe what they've done is Chesapeake Bay, right? Or Tampa Bay or the coastal Florida area or maybe the Keys. But before they take their own boat off on a longer journey to where it's a multi-day passage, right? I mean, 3 days for a lot of people underway would be, that's a lot, right? I mean, you wouldn't necessarily leave the
Oh,
dock
for most sailors, most.
and say that, you know what? I'm just going to run this 3 day trip offshore by myself. It's just,
Some
it's
people
just
do it,
doesn't.
but
Some
not
people
if you've got a big boat.
do it. Not if you got a big boat, and not if you've really been planning. You're going to have your things, but those people are want to be educated, and they want to see what the conditions are going to be like out there before they get their vessel out there. And then they're just looking to learn some of the techniques that we use offshore that you wouldn't typically use if you were, say, a racer. And then I kind of categorize most of the people that come along as cruisers, dreamers, and racers. That's about the
It's
three types
interesting
of
that you get
sailors.
racers coming on board because it's like I see it the other way around. Like I'm definitely a cruiser. I like to chill out and enjoy a tea while sailing. But I do
Exactly.
racing to learn how to sail trim better and to operate the boat better. Never heard it
That's
the other
right.
way around.
So that's the way that most racers are taught to race in a protected body of water.
Yeah.
So when you add the element of a sea state and then maybe a lee shore with a bunch of rocks on it, or
Surprises, basically.
something like that, you're not gonna wanna adjust that jib 3 inches, right? To get those telltales to fly exactly right. A lot of the times our telltales are just all over the place because we're trying to sail comfortably, right? So we don't
Yeah,
want to,
true.
sheet things in, and then we're not looking at, so the racers want to make sure that they're getting every ounce of performance out of the boat that they've been given, right? And so when I have racers that show up, I mean, I got lines. Like, if you want lines to pull, I got vangs, I got lifts, I got, man,
Loads of
there are
sales.
probably 50 different things you could pull on this boot if you were a racer. But I mean, I got guys that don't even have, there are race boats that don't even have cleats, like smaller ones. They just hold it. They just hold
The
it
small
so they can
ones.
ease and bring it in. Yeah, that's not the case. If you were to try to hold these lines and ease them in and out,
A 60-foot
you would
sailboat.
just like literally wear yourself out. And Libra has original winches from the 60s, so they're
Nice.
manual, a manual two speed. You have to have a tailor. So that, and could I have replaced all that? Sure. But what I feel that that gives you is a little bit of kind of team spirit, because now bringing the jib in is not just a one person job, right? You got to have a grinder and you got to have a tailor. And you need to be able to communicate what you're doing between each other while you're doing it, right? And you're doing it with a stranger, typically, right? And it's because I'm not the one that's going to be there with you. I'm usually, on the sidelines or behind the wheel, and I'm just kind of, most of the people that go with me have probably sailed some. I'm not the first step, and I'm not definitely not the last step, but I probably have more people that sail with me because they have already owned a boat. And they know how much it costs to keep and maintain. And so they're spending 20 grand a year to have a sailboat, and they get to use it 4 times or 3 times. And as they got older, those numbers went down drastically to where it just becomes kind of the white elephant, right? So here's a, so by the time you add up some insurance and you add up your slip rent, for a year, especially in Florida, or even in New England for a season, a slip would be 10 grand.
Yeah, crazy
It
expensive.
probably a less expensive place. I don't know exactly what the rates are in New England for the season, but I know that up there is different than in the South, where in the South we have a 12-month season, and in New England it's like 4. But it's more total for the year in New England than it is in like in the South where I'm from.
Oh yeah,
So those
it's a heavy
people.
tourist area as well for affluent
Yeah,
people.
exactly. Yeah, so those people will sail with me to get their sailing fix, right? They know they like to sail, they know how to sail, but they want to go to places that they've never sailed to and be able to experience it in a more traditional way than a $1.5 million Fontainebleau catamaran, right? So they're not looking for that experience. They're looking to be able to get on something by themselves where they can meet some like-minded people and have a good time for a week. Whether it is an ocean passage that maybe they've kind of longed to do, that's a kind of a goal for a lot of people, or just on this last trip to get to Grenada. And for me, the Eastern Caribbean, there's a lot of islands here, right? I mean, you just start naming them from the top, right? So you have the Virgin Islands a little bit more to the west, and then really Saint Martin is kind of the most northern populated island, that little group of islands right there, and then all the way in Grenada. If you're not counting Trinidad and Tobago and a little bit further point south, but like the primary Eastern Caribbean, I do that up and down the island chain. And we don't necessarily always know where we're going to stop because, weather, wind, and all those things. But we typically throw a couple of stops in there even on just a 5 or 6 day sail from St. Martin to Grenada, which is 450 miles. But like we'll swing into the Bitons in St. Lucia, right? Or we
Nice.
may go to the Pays Association in Dominica and grab a mooring, check in, and run up and go see a waterfall, right? Because a lot of the times, the people that are wanting to come and cruise this area probably have their boat and they just want to see how to do it. Like, how
Yeah.
do you kind of bounce down through these islands? You know, you see pictures of it, you can Google Earth it, you see all these YouTube channels that are doing it. But until you get down here and you realize that, well, when you get behind the island, there's no wind because the big rock blocks the
Stops the
trade
wind.
winds from coming, you know, from coming in from the east. So you sail really good between the islands, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody shuts off the valve. And then if you wanted to spend all day sailing in very variable winds to the end of that island, 30 miles or 20 miles away, you could, but it's typically a motor behind the island. So then
Yeah.
we'll stay like, you know, maybe 1 kilometer from shore. And then that way you can kind of see what's going on, you know, see
Yeah,
the
something to look
saints,
at.
you know, see something to look at as you're going down the island. And a lot of people think that when you get down here, that you from watching like Pirates of the Caribbean or something like that, right? That there's these vast distances between all of these places. And, you know, you could leave Grenada and you only lose sight of land like three times to get to Key West.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
every island you can see from every island. Like you go north from Grenada and you get to see you just, right out of that, you're in the Grenadines and then St. Vincent. You can see all
Yeah.
that even before you're out of the protection of Grenada. And then after St. Vincent, you got St. Lucia, and then you have Dominica, then Martinique. Every island is in view of the next island. So
Yeah.
the distances are kind of short until you get to something new. Now, you know, if we take the trip and passage from like the US Virgin Islands and then come to Grenada, that's typically an all offshore passage because of the angle. Because we're so further west, if we do a rum line and go straight, there's nothing between us. So this year we actually set up to do more kind of cruiser training. And so we stationed out of St. Martin. And being stationed out of St. Martin is, so I'm already east because your problem in the Caribbean is getting east. So
Yeah.
even from all the way over in Florida, where people just, you know, you've heard of the Thorny Path, you know, you've heard of I-65. You know,
What is the
you hear
thorny
all
path? Like, why do they call it thorny?
because it's into the wind and that's the thorn, right? So
Right.
the two typical ways to reach the Caribbean from the States is, you know, I-65, which is out and down. So if you were to leave anywhere on the East Coast, including Florida, you would leave and go and get into what's called the horse latitudes. You know, you would try to pick a time to where there's an area of high pressure between the Caribbean and Bermuda, and you basically get out there in it and motor east because there's not going to be any wind, right? So
Right.
you're looking for there to be no wind so you can gain east. And so what most people do is they'll cut the corner toward the end. But I have motored 500 miles off the East Coast,
Whoa.
like out of Florida, and just go 500 miles due east and just
Right.
autopilot locked on. And, you know, be no wind. The water's kind of flat, but you might still have an 8 foot swell that's 1 kilometer apart. So it looks like you're in this
Yeah.
big blue rolling meadow. But once you get out to the trades and the trades fill in, now you have this beautiful beam reach all the way to any of the Caribbean islands that you want to go to, right? Now, the thorny path is where you hop off the Florida coast, you get into the Bahamas, and you bounce through the islands of the Bahamas. And there's a book, and I don't read books all the time, but I do know that the thorny path is a book that people do read that kind of tells them the route that is the most feasible for getting to the Caribbean without going way offshore. And
Okay.
the only problem with that is it gets you about as far as the DR. So you get to the Turks and Caicos, and then you can kind of sail over to the Dominican Republic, which is most people's first overnight sail. You know, that
Yes,
one
true.
leg takes an overnight sail. And then you're going to bounce down the coast of the DR until you get to the Mona Passage. And then the Mona Passage, a lot of people write about or talk about or vlog or blog or whatever. Once you get about halfway across, you can see the DR and Puerto Rico. So as long as you pick a nice day to go across, it's not that bad. And you can do it during daylight hours. It's like, I don't want to say direct mileage because I kind of forget, but I know that you could probably do it in 16 hours in most boats, even a slower one. So if you left early, the problem there in the Mona Passage is you get currents, you get some thunderstorms and things like that. But doing this, you also have to wait for the trade winds to either change directions a little bit or die off. And the trade winds, by definition, aren't going to die off very often. So a lot of people kind of get to the DR and they can't get across the Mona Passage because every day it's out of the east at 15 to 20 to 25 knots, and you need to go east. And there, I mean, and it's directly east, right? It's right on your nose the whole time. So in a, so like if you were in a 30 something foot cruising style sailboat, you don't want to jump out and do 60 miles into the wind and into a sea state, because you're not with the currents. And this is another misconception that racers have on cruising boats is, we say, oh, well, you're just going to tack back and forth.
It's not
Okay,
nice,
well,
though, is
yeah,
it?
no. So, gentlemen, so the old saying goes, gentlemen don't sail to weather. So if you were to decide, you know what, I'm just the hardcore purist, and I'm going to push the engine over the side of the boat, and we're sailing across the Mona Passage into this 15 to 20 knot wind. Well, your first tack, you're already over 20 knots of wind because you're trying to sail through it. So now your apparent wind's up somewhere at 25. You're getting this, short, choppy sea state because of the currents between the two islands, and they could stack up kind of like little white elephants and be, 4 to 5 feet tall, or six in some areas, and it just beats up your boat. It beats your
Yeah,
boat
it's not
up,
nice.
and it beats you up, and your crew. And if you're taking anybody with you on your boat that's coming along to help you out, as soon as you get to Puerto Rico, if you were to try to tack across the Mona Channel, they're out of there. They're flying back home. Yeah, they've been beat up enough, right? This thorny path can be very thorny if you don't get good windows of weather, right? You need to be able to motor a lot to take the thorny path. And now, so Libra being, 40 tons, and me running on a schedule, I have, I'm motor the Mona Passage where it's kind of nasty, 6 to 8 foot chop. And but you just kind of get through it, right? You just hold on and grit your teeth and get through it. But I have the weight that can kind of smash these things down to where the people that are on board aren't getting really beat up. But in a smaller boat that's a light boat, and really any kind of new production boat is going to be kind of light and have a flat bottom, it's going to be
Yeah, it's just
rough.
going to be
And
horrible.
if a catamaran, just stay in the DR. I mean, you're going to have a really dead day to motor into that. But going back to that misconception where people think that you can just tack back and forth, remember the waves don't want you there, right? The ocean doesn't really want you there. That's what the waves are for. They're constantly trying to throw you out. So as soon as you leave the shoreline and you start sailing into this east wind, it's going to start pushing you back. So when you're a racer sailing in the bay, you're always making way. You're hard on the wind. You're on, you're close hauled. You're beating into it. You can maintain forward progress because you're not also fighting a sea state. The problem with a sea state is the tighter that you try to go into the wind, the tighter you end up going into the waves. And depending on the sea state and the size of the waves, you might not move. Like
Very true.
when you tack and you expect to be going at a way different or closer angle for your approach, you may be going parallel to the line you just made, because that's just the way that when you're sailing these bigger distances or bigger bodies of water, you're gonna get kind of stopped by the sea state. And so the thorny path is you have to wait for the wind to die. And when you wait for the wind to die, you have some time to burn. But the good thing about it is a lot of people, that's what they're looking for anyway. So they're looking to go visit the DR. They're looking to visit the Turks and Caicos. They want to go to Puerto Rico, and they want to have this experience all the way over to the Eastern Caribbean. But for me, and I just have a little bit different skill set. For me, I always took I-65. So I haven't come to the Caribbean down the thorny path, only because I know the closer that you get to the Caribbean, the more it sucks. You know, the more you get beat up. And that doesn't say that after we go out to I-65 and come down, that we don't end up in 25 knots of wind with 15 to 18 foot sea state, you know, in the trades. But it's on our beam, and every day we're making 9, 10 knots, you know, underway because we got plenty of wind and the sea state's actually kind of helping us down, you know, get to the islands. But you do have to put in your motoring time at the beginning of I-65 versus where you put it in at the end of, well, you put it in the whole way on a thorny path. But I'm sure there's plenty of days you can sail through the Bahamas on that too. So that's how you get to kind of get to the Caribbean from the States.
Yeah, it does sound like a little bit of a pain in the arse. You know, it's like I don't mind getting beat up when I'm on my boat as long as I'm like making good pace. Like if
Yeah,
I'm getting
right.
smashed and it's horrible and I'm doing like 6 knots, I'm like, oh fuck it, you know, we're getting somewhere. But yeah, like we've got a similar situation here because we live in the south of Spain and like exiting the Mediterranean sometimes is just completely impossible.
Yeah, right.
Like you've got the current because you've constantly got a current coming in because of like all the water that's being evaporated, and if you've got wind on the nose as well, like just forget it. I've abandoned it many times. Like I've got out there with my family, and I'm like we're doing like 0.5 knots. Like we're literally not going anywhere. And you know it's 25 knots of wind, all good, but like the boat doesn't move. So
And I like the way that you
like.
say that too. You know that you went out there and you abandoned the trip. And I teach this too because you know what? There's always tomorrow,
Oh
and
yeah.
you'll get a better window. But on the offshore stuff, what I teach mainly is risk management. You don't have so thank goodness now we have Starlink. You know, I've been running Starlink now since before they had all these fancy plans. You know, I've been running around testing this stuff out, and it's been great. But being out exposed in the elements, just the elements, right? So just the spray and just the wind blowing on you. And if you ever get a little rain or something like that, that sucks even more. But a lot of people are sailing around, you know, with a dodger and a top, but not a whole lot of side protection. So you're gonna get that air, you're gonna get that wind, and that's the least of most people's worries as far as exposure. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, well, what kind of foul weather gear should I get? I'm like, well, you don't necessarily need it on Libra because we're not going to go out in it anyway, right? Let's not, I haven't ever canceled a trip because of bad weather because we sail typically during the seasons in areas where we have good weather. But the reason that we don't have foul weather gear is because we have a hard dodger, a hard top. It zips up. It's like you're in a living room. You can turn the wind, you can turn the wind off. So now you don't get wore out. You don't get that exposure. You don't lose a lot of hydration and moisture because the wind will just wick water out of you.
Oh
So,
man, like you get dehydrated so much
yeah,
quicker.
eliminate heat. Just wind blowing on your skin takes moisture out of you. So, I get the hardcore sailors that really want to be out there and have their face in the wind and say, but you know what? If you did that for 4 days, your fourth day, you're not going to be very good,
No, you're
right?
exhausted.
You're exhausted. So I teach risk management, which is what you're practicing when you go out and say, you know what? It's just too rough. And the people that are on the boat are going to get a little beat up and may even, but you know, you could even become injured or something like that because most boat injuries, believe it or not, are inside the boat, right? It's not that you're on the deck and you fall off. It's not this. It's because a pot fell on you, right? Or you got slung into a wall or the mast, which is why, you know, you want a boat where you have handholds and grab spaces and things like that. On Libra, you know, because we do take a lot of new to sailing people or new to boat motion, where some people may describe it as violent. I've had it described as, it's like, wow, this is a really violent motion. And
It's a
I'm thinking,
violent experience.
oh, that's a, you know, that's, I never really thought about it that way, but you know, rough is a good word to use. So when it's
Most
rough.
people don't get tossed around in the day-to-day lives. I can imagine how they'd be like, how on earth do you
Yeah.
live like this?
I mean, trust me, in my welcome letter, I could send you a copy of it, but some of the instructions in my welcome letter are like, make sure that you cut your toenails.
That's a good one. I'd recommend that in all day-to-day
Because
life.
you've been in an office for the last 40 years, right? You've been doing your day job. You've saved up. You're ready to go kind of retire, maybe try this lifestyle out. But your feet have been in socks for 40 years. You may have claws down there that you don't even know about. And so now you're down in the Caribbean where it's hot, and you may or may not have sailing shoes or anything like that. And I've seen some. I had a guy, the reason that's in the email is because I had a guy get stabbed in the leg with somebody stepping over him. So, and it went into his, like, it was a very deep penetration wound. It was not necessarily that they
Jesus.
hit an artery or anything, but it took us a while to get it to stop bleeding. It was pretty deep. And
So
so
it's
that's the
almost
risk management.
toenail.
A toenail, yeah.
Now, that's one of the most disgusting things. That if
It's
somebody did that to me,
so
that'd
yeah,
be a
so that's
hard
a
time.
I have people that take my welcome letter because it a lot of times it doesn't seem very welcoming. So it's just kind of so but I you know my first sentence is read this with a grain of humor, because a lot of the things you're going to read are because things have happened, and I just have to wait I have to find a way to put it in words to where it's not going to necessarily turn you off or offend you. But you know what? If you were to go get a pedicure, it's not going to hurt my feelings, right? Because we had a guy get stabbed and almost bled out because he got, was cut with somebody's toenail. And
Probably
that
the
goes
only
back.
reason I'd ever recommend a man getting a pedicure, actually, now.
Yeah.
Listen to
You know what? It's not
this story.
that bad, right? No, in the email it actually says, now this may not be a treatment that you're used to doing, but let this one be your first.
Yeah, I did it once. I got a
Suck it
pedicure
up.
once. It was
Yeah, where
weird.
at? Where was it at?
It was when I was in Dubai, because the men over there pay a lot of attention to the way they look.
Yeah, the grooming, right? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, which
Yeah,
is fine, you know.
apparently I'm lacking there a little
Yeah,
bit a
we
lot of
wouldn't
times.
know.
Yeah, right,
Yeah,
exactly.
it's
Yeah, I
not
don't
for
know how that
us.
is.
But yeah, they'll go and have facials and pedicures and stuff, and I was
Right.
like, no, I'm never doing that. It's just not
Yeah.
in my DNA to do that. And I went once and I did hate it. I've never gone back since. I don't want people playing with my feet.
The first time I did it, they kind of take that cheese grater and kind of take the bottom of your foot off. You have dead feet. Like, I just want guys to get their nails done. Go get your nails trimmed and dulled. That's what I want you to do. But yeah, the pedicure where they're like basically taking all of your skin off the bottom of your foot. The first one that I ever had that I'll always remember was I couldn't really walk the next day, right? And I'm sure that the lady that was on the beach had a license, and knew exactly what she was doing and all of this other stuff. This was in Thailand. I think it literally cost me $2 for an hour for her to do my nails or whatever. But I don't know if she was talking to her friend too much, but I think she removed too much skin. So I couldn't w physically walk the next day. I was like tenderfooted, get a little
Yeah,
of that
but
stuff
you're
kind of
used
grow
to
back.
having like a good layer of,
Well,
dead
I am
skin
now.
protection on down there.
I am now. This was back in my first pedicure was back in my Delta days when I was in Thailand. So, because everybody else seemed to be doing it. They're sitting in a beach chair
They
hanging
caught
out, and
me.
they come by and offer you coconuts, or they come by and offer you candy or a float, and then so there's a group that comes by and offers you pedicures. So you
Do you know,
can do
actually,
just
the
about
first
anything you want.
I was going to say the first time I had a massage was in Thailand, and not, no, this isn't a joke.
You,
It
yeah, I know,
genuinely
right? Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the
was
jokes start off that way, but I understand what you're saying. My, hey,
because
you know what? Mine also in the same fashion too. So a
on the
proper
beach.
Thai massage, yeah, on the beach too, yeah.
On the beach. I remember I was down there, and it was something ridiculous. It was like $5 for like an hour, and I got roped into that, and I hated that also because she walked on me, and I'm like, I don't understand. I didn't get that. At the time, my only experience of massages was like, sports rub or something, like with getting knot out.
Yeah.
So yeah, she full on stood on me. I was not impressed.
Yeah. She was she a big girl or normal or like, as
No,
most
she
of the
was
time they're
like
about eight,
Thai.
they're like 80 pounds, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they
Exactly.
all look
They're
like children.
not very heavy at all. Yeah, that was, the same thing. I was a little weirded out. But then I kind of, 'cause I lived there for 4 years. So I kind of got into it. You can go to a massage place. It's 2 hours, and remember, we're talking about legitimate massages here. If you go to a Thai
Which nobody
massage
believes.
place, Well, yeah, and it's, you know, it's 2 hours, and it's usually like, or you know, this 20 years ago, I have absolutely no idea how much it is now, but it was like $10 for 2 hours at a facility, like at a place where, you know, they had the chairs that you could sit in, and they do your legs for so long, right? And
No
they
naked
do your
people.
feet. Yeah,
That's
no naked people at all. Exactly.
the
Nothing. Nothing like that. But also, you know, that was also because I'm from Alabama, so my world reach wasn't very much. I grew up in an area where, you know, we would go and go mud riding for the weekend. That was
What's
our
that?
activity, you know, like four-wheel driving, right?
Oh, yeah, like what you
So
call
take
them
a four by four.
ATVs, do you?
Yeah, but
So he's.
we did it with our own vehicles. So we didn't
Oh,
have,
yeah, that's fine.
yeah, so you know, big trucks, big tires, kind of redneck type stuff. And or, you know, and then go away. Anyway, I had a blast. I had a great time. But as far as being introduced to a lot of different cultures, it wasn't there. I mean, I grew up in like literally a cotton town. You know, we had a cotton mill, and that was where everybody worked.
So your like life experience in terms of working and experiencing the world went from like Alabama all the way to Asia, like
Yeah, exactly. So I did Europe.
oh.
I did Europe for 2 years before I did Asia for four. I would not like I worked for Delta for about 10 years, and I was a technician. So, I lived in London officially, but I was never there because I
Right.
was the one that would go and fix a broken printer, right? So, and you would physically have to go to these cities that didn't have a technician located there, and a lot of times, I'm just plugging it in, right? Because it would become unplugged. So the job itself was not very demanding, but the travel was extensive. I mean, you had to have somebody young. And I mean, I might hit three cities in one day because I want to get it over with, right? I want to go fix these problems and get it off of my plate, right? Or off of my chart. And, you know, just working in Europe really kind of exposed me to a lot of cultural things that growing up in Alabama, you just don't get. We never vacationed. I mean, vacation for me as a child was we're going to that beach, you know, we're going to go to Orange Beach. My grandparents live there and were retired, so you know, summers would be spent a couple of weeks at grandma's house, and that was kind of the extent of my, you know, culture, you know, as far as getting out and seeing the world until I was about. So I started really early at Delta. I was 19 years old when I started my, you know, career there, and I just happened to hit the market at a time with some desirable skills that allowed me to get a job that young. So I kind of grew up in the airline industry and, you know, weathered a lot of different bankruptcies, 9/11, you know, just the airline industry is a turbulent industry anyway. But living, you know, living in London, I would work like, so that was when Greece was building their new airport outside of Athens. You know, the airport used to be in downtown Athens. It was, you know, that was the airport. Well, they built a brand new one, of course. Probably not brand new now because this has been 20 years ago.
Still
And so I was
good.
there for like 3 months, you know, live at the Hilton, like overlooking the Acropolis. And that was my house. And I would go home every night to the Hilton.
Not bad.
But that's, yeah, I know it was a very different way to
Bloody
travel and to
hell.
get
So you
experiences.
went from like a small town in Alabama to like sitting down in a Hilton hotel overlooking the Acropolis.
Yeah. I mean, it
That's
wasn't
wild.
that, that's, yeah, the way that you put it right there is eye-opening to me too, because that's almost exactly what I did. I had several different jobs before Delta in the tech field or in technology that bounced me through that very quickly into the upper position. So
Do you know a
I
weird
didn't have a whole lot
parallel
of
on that?
growing.
Like, just you've gone from literally like the newest version of democracy to the actual founding of democracy in a
Yeah,
way. Like, going from like
exactly right.
America, which
Yeah.
is the latest experiment, like back to Greece. Like, it's
Right. Yeah, and
crazy
then you know you
transition.
have the guys with you know, whichever the main square is in Athens, and I'm sure a lot of people know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, they have basically the soldier that guards. I think it's the
Oh, it's where the diplomats are and the
yeah, but there's, you know,
yeah,
the
I
guards,
know
they have little pom-poms on their shoes. Now every country has a different type of military uniform.
mean.
And so they have the, you know, like usually it's like a marching band and you have something on your head. Well, these were on the tips of their shoes.
I never noticed
And
that, really.
I always thought that that was very interesting. And this was also when they had drachma. So, or whatever, I just probably slayed the name of their currency, before they had euro, right? So, and the denominations were like
Oh God, man,
a million.
it was super cheap
Yeah,
Greece back
right.
then as
Like,
well. Because I went a couple of times before they got on the euro, and the difference was like shit cost double, like literally when they changed
Overnight,
over.
literally overnight. And so we were, so the coolest thing to me at being that old was to, I'm looking at currency that has a million on
There's not many
it. And
left of
this is just
those.
like normal, because inflation had ran so rampant for so long that $1 million bill was just normal, and I never experienced that at all. But yeah, living in Greece was very interesting. But I lived a very, like, starting off, it was very sheltered because I woke up and I did my job and I went to work and I did my work things and I hung out with my work buddies. And when I would come back to be done for the day, we're kind of all still there because we're all doing the same thing. And we basically just ended
In an
up hanging
American
out like
hotel in the
in an
center of
American
Athens.
hotel, just like a lot of traveling salesmen used to do or traveling technicians. But the coolest thing about that was there was, I remember the top floor where the bar was in the Hilton. It's on one hill, the Hilton is, and you can see the Acropolis right behind the bartenders. And it's still several kilometers away, but it was just being in that, I've read this and seen it in encyclopedias, or books, barely even the internet. We're still gathering internet stuff, so. Is when I was growing up, you hear about all these places and Romans and, just traveling type stuff. And like the first time I went to Paris, first place that I'm going to go is the Eiffel Tower. I've only seen pictures of it or just heard that it existed, right? I've never seen it with my own eyes. So I really wanted to go around and kind of hit all of these hot spots while I was young and had that kind of, let's call it the golden ticket, because I wasn't really paying for the trips, right? This is work related type stuff. Or even when I would fly for pleasure, as long as you get a standby seat, didn't cost you anything then either. So, yeah, opening my eyes to a world of travel. And I remember a buddy of mine in London going, because I left to go somewhere after I got back from somewhere else just for fun. And I have a place to stay in London. He was like, yeah, you got the travel bug. He says, now you're infected. You can't shake the travel bug once you get it. And here I am, 20 something years later, can't sit still, still moving.
It's the
I
way you
just do it
built
a
my.
lot, still a lot slower pace now, 7 miles an hour instead of 700. But still, I'm going to get there eventually.
Like the one thing I need to work on with my wife, not that like she needs work, I don't want to make it sound like
Yeah, right now, yeah.
that, but that
Your
sounds bad.
disclaimer there.
She's yet to appreciate like the solitude of a good like overnight 2-3 day passage, and like how it can repair you in a way as well. She's yet to appreciate that. So every time we go somewhere on the boat that takes more than a day, she's like, "Oh my God, we could have been here in 2 hours." I was like, "That's not the point.
Yeah,
This is
you
a
can't.
different way of moving."
It is a different way of moving, and that does exist. Like I can go across the Atlantic in, 6 or 8 hours, but getting there on a boat's a lot more fun and a little bit more risky. But you don't necessarily think about those things when you're cruising.
Yeah,
So
true.
after you cruise for a little while, you kind of forget. You kind of almost start disliking the idea of doing public transportation fast. I mean, I fly quite a bit just because of I end up in a lot of random locations, but not. And when I say quite a bit, I probably mean 3, 4 times a year, right? Because I'm typically with the boat wherever it's at, and so I'm not gonna. It was hard. I get people that are like, "Well, you could just fly over there for this." I'm like, "Yeah, but the journey is the adventure," and until they get out and experience it. They don't, it's hard for them to picture or feel that emotion that you
Very
get
true.
when you're offshore. A lot of people call and they ask, they need help picking a trip, right? So I have, 15 to 20 trips a year. Which one would you recommend that I go on at this level of, education that I have now? And if they have a little bit of sailing experience and they're looking to maybe be a cruiser full time in the future, then I say, go on something to where you can be sailing for at least 3 days. or at least 3 overnight periods. So take a
Yeah.
passage that has a 3 day block. Like in the Caribbean, we can do that between St. Martin and Grenada. You know, it's 3 days, right? So that third day is usually kind of your ah moment, right? So your first day, everything's weird and new, and you're probably puking, right? So
Yeah.
if you didn't read my email and follow my email instructions that says, you know, I'm not necessarily going to hold your hair back if you don't follow these instructions, right? So like, you know, scopolamine patches or whatever people would want to take for seasickness, they don't always listen to me because they want to test their system. And those people that want to test their system
Not
usually lose. Man, I've had 6 people lined up on my rail, all
Six.
holding. Oh yeah, they're all be holding each other and just waiting for the world to end. Because I know that
Oh
when you
my
feel
gosh.
seasick, it's bad, right? You feel terrible when you're seasick. I can
Yeah,
look
I
at these
felt it
people
once,
and
my only.
yeah, I have found myself in precarious situations where I'm like, I think that I need to change what I'm doing because I feel myself going down. And I haven't been seasick yet.
I've never
I'm
vomited, but I felt queasy once, so I
that's
got
kind of what
behind the
I mean,
helm.
right? That's kind of what I mean is I haven't been seasick yet. And trust me, I'm not some badass that's gonna say, oh yeah, I ain't gonna get seasick. I'm never gonna get Yeah, I don't have a tendency to get seasick at all and can watch people on the rail throw up all day long. And that's just fine with me. Not with them, but it's fine with me. And those things don't bother me, but I know at some point it's going to catch up with me, right? All my seasickness luck, the waves are going to put my body into a rhythm at some point that it's not used to, and it's going to mess it up. So those people
There will
show
be
up and
emotion that will get you.
yeah, test their system. So 3 days. The first day you're sick and getting used to things. The second day you're recovering from the first day of being sick, typically, and just the newness of everything. And then that third day is finally when you're in a rhythm with your schedule. You've been doing your night watches and day watches because we run a 24-hour rotation. You have 3 hours on, 6 hours off. You know, a lot of boats do 4 and 4 or whatever, but I kind of like the 3 and 6 because
Yeah, that's
the
nice.
3 hour watch is not going to kill you. It's not too long, even in the middle of the night. And then 6 hours is plenty. If you're tired and you lay down, you're
Yeah,
going to get
full
some
sleep.
solid, you're solid, some solid sleep. And 6 hours of solid sleep on a boat's pretty good when you only got to wake up and hang out and make sure you don't run over something for 3. And if you're still
Yeah.
tired, you go back to bed. So that leaves most people awake during the day, but and then they have their, you know, little routine in the morning. And on the trips that are longer than 3 days, you really kind of get into a rhythm and you understand that being offshore on a longer trip on a journey, not necessarily a sail for the afternoon, is apples and oranges, right? From sailing around in the bay, because it now it's more of a business because you're controlling yourself, you're learning, you're staying safe, right? Like sometimes it's so rough that when people come down my companionway, I'm like, look, today's a scoot day. That means you put your butt on the floor and you scoot the other 15 feet to the head. Because standing up, I get a lot of people that are tall, top heavy, you know, maybe a little bit bigger. That doesn't necessarily stop them from going, but they fall a lot harder. You know, I
Oh
mean, if you, I mean, I
yeah.
had a guy leave he was in the galley in the boat. It's not that you fall, it's that the boat moves around you. You're really the stationary object. So the boat took a dip, went to 0G. His feet kind of came up for a second. By the time his feet came back down, he'd moved about 15 feet in the boat and ended up kind of tangled up around the mast, starting off in the galley, which is, I don't know, you can't see, but it's quite a ways away. And so that's that risk management, right? So anytime you're offshore and you're away from help to where your nearest help is going to be a, you know, I hate to say a helicopter, but at least a ship or somebody that could, you know, come provide some type of assistance is going to be a long time. So if you get hurt, not only are you going to be typically in pain for a long time, it ruins the trip for everybody else. And you need to, and this not just on what I'm saying for my trips, but on your own boat, on your own vessel, risk management when you get offshore is like the number one thing that you need to do. Now, you don't need to be a paranoid crazy person, right? You don't need to do that. I'm just saying that when you're doing your motions around the boat, think about it. And so
Yeah.
the pictures and in the magazines and some of the print media that a lot of people get, they see, and at West Marine, the clothing, this sailing clothing, right, that they sell. You know, you can go get dolled up by any brand, right? Helly Hansen, Mustad, all these great, and they're all great clothes and all great brands. But if you're 65 and getting into retirement, do you really think that you're going to go on the foredeck of a boat in 6 foot seas with a little red light on your head and all of this gear strapped down to the deck to go grab a line and retie it? That would be just an unnecessary waste of risk, right? Like, there's no reason.
Yeah.
Before you put yourself in a bad position, think about it. And that's really what I mean about risk management, right? It's like, is it safe to go on the foredeck and do this, even if we're strapped in at all these conditions? Well, it may be for a 25-year-old, right, that's been racing and sailing and smashing through the waves. And the bowman's always kind of the younger guy because he's going to swim most of the time anyway. And it takes a lot of endurance to do those things. And if you were to do that as a retiree or somebody's getting ready to retire and you're a little older, that goes back to being exposed, right? You just put yourself out there for all these elements to just clobber you right on the head. And you may get a sense of accomplishment when you're done tying that line, but you just put you at risk and a lot of other people that were on the boat at risk too. And I'm not saying that things don't need to be done on the boat. I'm just saying, you know, manage it out, right? Can that wait till tomorrow or can it wait till a better time? You know, there's all kind of stories to where people get hurt just on the boat.
Yeah.
All in all, falling off is very rare, but
Yeah,
getting
true.
hurt on the boat is very often. I mean, I had a guy that just drove his dinghy into a cruiser friend years and years ago, 15 years ago or so. He was driving his dinghy and they didn't have a dredging pipe lit. So a dredge, you know, dredges and then the pipe kind of floats and has floats on it. Well, his boat went under, but his head hit the pipe. He's because he's at night, so the thing wasn't lit up. So he shows up the next day in the restaurant slash bar and he's got this big bloody wrap around his head.
No
He's all
way.
smile. Yeah, he was all smiles because whatever company it was didn't have their lights on, so he was seeing dollar
Payday.
signs. But
Payday.
still, you know, you gotta be careful when you're out here. I mean, I had,
Yeah.
you know, another adventure not too long ago, was run over by, which is a YouTube channel with Holly, and she's been in the VI for a long time, and they got run over by a boat that was being stolen in their dinghy at night, you know, and they had
No
lights on their
way.
dinghy. And the boat that ran over them didn't have any lights or anything. They just heard the engine and all of a sudden, and you know, they're both in the water and unconscious. So there's a lot of risk out here. It's safer than driving to work in most cities,
Yeah,
right?
that I'd agree
Like,
with.
yeah, it's safer than driving to work in a car. But after you learn to kind of manage what you should and shouldn't do to stay safe, it becomes a lot more enjoyable because
It's second
you're not
nature as
so.
well.
Yeah, it's saying you don't feel so paranoid about things breaking and all this other stuff. You know, after you get a little bit more calm and cool and you understand your boat more and how it responds and the sounds that it makes, it's very nice. And especially I tell people, I say that fourth day, if you take a passage and it is offshore for 4 days, that fourth day you're going to really enjoy being on the water. No matter, I've had people that look like they were going to die on the first day and beg to get off, but there's just
Yeah.
nowhere to get off typically. But by the fourth day, they're looking like, what's the next one? You know, what's my next sailing adventure? Because, you know, they coming into your new port is full of all different types of emotions. If you've never experienced leaving one shoreline and basically rising another shoreline out of the ocean on your way, I
Oh, it's
mean,
very
it's,
cool.
It's a kind of an awe-inspiring moment. And if you're doing, and what's better is on the Libra trips is you're doing it typically with, you know, four or five other people that are doing the same thing that you're doing. You know, they haven't experienced things either. So the atmosphere is really, you know, joyous and fun. But then you realize, oh, now I'm getting kind of close to the end of my trip. I'm fixing to have to, I have to put shoes on to go to the airport, right? Because they're not gonna let me on the plane with no shoes. So now you got to put your socks back on, you got to hide your pedicure, load things back up, get back on an airplane, and go back to the office. And that's a big emotional take for a lot of people after they've been watching YouTube videos and dreaming about this lifestyle, and they finally take that step to get offshore and they get that magic trip that's really good, where they had all the experiences that they were trying to get, and then that those last few hours on the boat are really rough. I mean, I wouldn't say every trip, but people get emotional quite often, you know, departing the boat. I mean, it's either a growing experience for them, or man, I'm glad this is over with. It could be that too, right? I'm not saying that it's all, yeah, it's not all necessarily butterflies and unicorns and rainbows, right? People get beat up out here, but that's what they're coming to do. They're coming to see how they respond. And that's the gist of what Libra provides is, you know, we do the longer passages and we do transatlantics and we do 20-day thing, you know, 20-something day passages from the Canaries to back to the Caribbean. And those are kind of a little bit more advanced. You have to, it would be hard for me to take a brand new person that's never been sailing on a crossing, only because if you get sick, I mean, seasickness is real. So if you don't know how your body responds to the conditions, it's going to kind of suck if you respond the wrong way and you're committed to 2 weeks on the water, which is kind of what the North Atlantic crossing would be from like Bermuda over to the Azores. You're looking at, you know, 10 to 14 days, depending on your boat.
I mean, especially like doing a doing like a Southern Atlantic crossing. Also, like I know people who only get sick when they're sailing downwind because that's obviously a rocking motion. It depends on your boat, but
If it's
yeah, I
a
mean,
monohull, it's rocking.
yeah, if it's a
Typically,
monohull,
yeah.
it is. And yeah, like doing doing an ocean passage for someone like that would be absolutely brutal. But one of our friends, a couple who were friends with, they've got a YouTube channel called The Rigging Doctor, Maddie and Herb. Like lovely people. She just vomits all the time, like when she's on the boat. Like we chartered with them in Greece, and as soon as we start sailing, she's just vomiting. When they did an Atlantic crossing, which I think they've done a couple of, she's just vomits, just seasick the entire crossing, but she
I
loves
think
it.
there's other channels out there too that are like that,
Oh,
you know.
yeah.
And I think so. I could be wrong, but don't quote me on this, even though I'm saying it. I think that the MJ Sailing, I think that the lady that's on that channel also had a similar situation. They had an aluminum boat that they had rebuilt years ago
Oh,
and
yeah, I
sailed
watched
it across
that.
the Atlantic, and they and I think that she kind of battled with seasickness and being seasick.
Well, mate, my
For
wife was
some
pretty
people, it just
bad.
doesn't go away.
And she went for hypnotherapy, and it got rid of the seasickness, the hypnotherapy, which was nuts. I was like, is this lady doing witchcraft on you or what? I didn't believe
No
it.
kidding, really. I haven't heard that yet, so that's going in the email.
And mate, I put it on. I spoke about it on my podcast with a couple of guests I had on, and they were like, "Oh, can I get the
Right.
details?" And then they've been
Sure.
for it, and people have listened and emailed, and then they've emailed back. And like, "Oh, it's way better now." So. Like you can trick
Wow.
yourself into getting out of it.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, a lot of people say, oh, seasickness is just mental. And I say, yeah, okay, some of it is, but some people
It's
just get
triggered by
seasick.
something.
Yeah, some people just get seasick and they can't get over it. And I feel like that's super rare. I feel it's super rare for somebody to get sick and then stay sick the whole time while they're on the boat or while they're on a passage.
Like
It's
you're not
usually
adapting to the
an
motion at
Yeah,
all.
exactly. You know, your body has a way of recovering itself, but if you have a cold or you have some kind of inner ear thing or you're congested, you know, all of that adds to your balance and everything else. So if you have a cold and go sailing and get seasick, things might not ever clear up because, you know, you're congested, and sailing congested is what
Yeah, that's
people
not nice. That's like
it's
easiest
not
headache you'll ever get.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the hypnotherapy is very interesting. I'm going to check into that. This is the first I've heard of it. Now, not to say that I don't listen to your podcast. I just missed that one.
Well, mate, I'm going to name drop one of our mutual friends called Joey just to test if he listens to my podcast. If there
Joey.
was, yeah, if there was ever one he would listen to, it would be this. So. Yeah, we'll see.
Joey. Yeah, Joey. So I met him in Bermuda.
That's right. Yeah.
And so then we all kind of rode out a hurricane together, or a small tropical storm. I
I jumped
lost
on
my
that boat later on, actually.
oh on the what was that thing? It was a
A piece of shit, something. That
can we
thing broke so
can
hard.
we say that? Can we say that? Yeah.
It was a
So
Bavaria C-57. Beautiful
there you
boat,
go.
but
A Bavaria,
really
yeah.
collapsed
It
on
looked
the
like
open ocean.
it looked like it came right out of IKEA, right off the shelf of IKEA.
Yeah.
Every piece of furniture in it looked like it had one of those little thumb screws, right, where they're putting the boards together. But so, and then I say in a lot of things, like boats or like dogs, everybody can pick their own one out, and it's either good or bad, but it fits them,
Fits
you
them,
know.
yeah.
And you know, there's a place for that boot. It just wasn't where it didn't take the, like, the owner wasn't on it.
No, he was in London, I think. The
Yeah,
James, the owner.
so yeah, so he
It's
made
just
a
not an
boot,
ocean
and
boat.
it's just not an ocean boot. The bottom's too flat. I mean,
Yeah.
they pound. They really do pound.
Mate, I'm
But
not
yeah, I do
joking,
so.
right? Like, I've got a Juno 54DS, which is of it was a. You know, it was a cruiser racer when they released it
Sure,
in like the early 2000s, but it doesn't pound. You know, it'll slam every so often, but it has to be short waves and heavy. That thing, like, oh my God, every wave you went over, and try and sleep being like just vigorously vibrated to the point where you can feel it in your organs. Like, that is how bad that boat pounds.
Oh yeah, feeling it in your organs. So that's a thing, right? So it can be so rough that the muscles inside of your body that hold all of your internal organs in place, or internal organs in place, actually stretch and move. People don't realize this, right? It would be like, I had a trip when I was in Thailand, and I had some buddies in town, and I said, let's go to Cambodia and go to Angkor Wat and see the temple and all this
Oh,
stuff.
nice.
And we all had free, you know, the magic ticket, right? We were all technicians. But we decided to go by land. And you know, when we got to Cambodia from Thailand to do the border crossing, I
Going to
mean,
say that would be an interesting border crossing,
yeah,
that
exactly. It really was, you know, this is where
pretty wild
the
place,
kids,
Cambodia.
it was like the Wild West. It put Thailand to me in an area that was like, well, Thailand's New York
Oh,
City.
yeah,
Thailand
it's
is New
night and
York
day,
City
mate.
compared to Cambodia.
Yeah, I
So
wasn't
we
ready
were
for
on this,
Cambodia when I first went there.
we were on this road to go between the border town and Angkor Wat that had, you know, they worked on it all the time, apparently. But it had the bulldozer tracks, right? The short tracks that are left in the mud after the bulldozer runs through. And we had this driver, and he's driving like 100 kilometers an hour over this stuff. And just the whole car feels like it's going to fall apart. And this was for like 4 or 5 hours to get to wherever we were going. And we were all, and the reason you said to hurt your organs, I remember that going after we stopped, just almost being numb because of
Yeah.
all of the vibrating that happened. Now, I wouldn't expect any boat to be like that Toyota Camry that I rode in 20 something years ago. But yeah, I understand that when it's rough, it's rough. And then, so the good thing about Libra is I do have weight that offsets that. And then the hull shape itself is something different. I haven't really had it pound yet. You know, we take a couple of knocks every now and then, but it doesn't pound or vibrate or anything. And I just
Yeah.
feel lucky that I was able to get the boot, and it is, you know, in great shape, and it's still going, you know, 54 years
Yeah.
old.
There's gonna, mate, I was talking to John Kretschmer about this when I did a podcast with him. Like, there is gonna come a time where your boats just don't exist anymore, and boats like that don't exist anymore because they're just
Yeah.
rusted or they've been put in a trash heap or whatever. But yeah, eventually it's just gonna be flat bottom. Like racing style hull boats, and that's
Eventually,
it.
you better hope that you can get there fast so you can get there and pick
Yeah.
a comfortable day to go.
I just
But
have
you
to
know, there's
stop doing ocean crossings.
I feel like the law boy, there'll always be a builder out there that's going to build an ocean worthy boat. But then again, you're in the back of
Price
the
range.
day, the price range wasn't so vast, right? Because to get a 60-foot blue water monohull cruiser now, you're looking at $1 million. I mean, you know,
Oh,
it's
yeah,
just
and
or
more.
more, right? Yeah. But to get a newer boat that's ocean outfitted and not a boat show boat, right, where you have to go and check boxes, like, yeah, I'd love to have a spinnaker, and that's just,
I
it's
would
just a
like a
box.
winch.
Yeah, it's just a box that you check, right? Like, the boat is the boat, and then, yeah, if you would actually like sails on it, that's an extra box that you check.
Yeah.
So, that's the type of sailing that most people end up doing anyway. Ocean
Sure.
sailors and the Azores and Bermuda both are really great places to boat and people watch, because
Yeah.
the ones that got there had to go through something to get there.
And
And
then
so
they're going to
you
have to go
hear,
through something to get to the
and then they got to go
next place.
somewhere to get to the next place. So there's always a very interesting bar nightlife in those areas of all the stories going around. But
Yeah.
even the boats that you see too, you don't see it. You do see new boats, and you always see production boats. They're always there. They're great boats.
Oh, yeah, they can do
But
it.
a lot of the boats that you see are have been outfitted, and they're in the 40-foot range. They're not in the 50-something foot range. They're low 40s, mid 40s, but they've been outfitted, right? And you can tell that they have a lot of safety things on them. They have a spray curtains for the cockpit, right, to
Yeah.
keep that water from spraying on you and things like that. So they've just been outfitted correctly to do those types of passages. So then you meet a lot of like-minded people. I love taking my guys into those places, because it's almost like letting the kids free and to go play with the other kids, except all of the other kids are not dreamers. They were actually doing it. And then the thing that the people that realize after they were on the boat with me to get to Bermuda's a big stop for me. I end up being there probably, I don't know, 6, 8 times a year or something like that. The people that I take in there don't realize until they get into the social activity in Bermuda with the other cruisers that now they have some of the same stories as everybody else. They're part of the group. But they were sitting on the sidelines the whole time, but now they've arrived into Bermuda by sail, and they get to hear the other cruiser stories, and now theirs are very similar too, as far as the conditions that we had coming there. I went through a low pressure system back in the fall to get to Bermuda, and it ended up not really being much of anything, but it was still, when you look at a Earth overview and anything looks like a circular motion, you don't necessarily go take your boat through the middle of it.
No, you
Even if
avoid
it's a thunderstorm, right? If it's spinning,
Many
let's not
movies
get
made
anywhere
about
near it.
this.
Yeah, exactly. And luckily, I mean, I just couldn't avoid this thing. And it wasn't a tropical system, it wasn't anything like that, but it was very daunting to see it graphically, because
Yeah.
with Starlink now and the Windy app, I know that you go pick your favorite sailing app, whatever it is, because I don't even know which ones exist, because I typically use Windy. There's a lot of people use Predict Wind and some other things like that. So I just use Windy. I'm a premium subscriber, because I don't want it to go away. How long can they
That's brilliant.
run this thing for free, man? Hey, here's $20 for the year or 30 or whatever it is. Let's keep this thing going. Because with the addition of Starlink, I
It's
have
worth
this.
paying. The extra information you get
Oh
is
yeah.
priceless.
Priceless. And I can have real-time Doppler radar, so I can have land-based Doppler radar all through the Caribbean. I can see a squall develop on Windy and be going into it and know that it's there. And the same thing with weather on longer passages. You can see a global overview real-time from a camera in space, and where you're at on that screen in relationship. Sure, you could do this with weather services and your buddy with a Garmin inReach, right? Send a text message. That's what we did for years. We had a Garmin inReach, and I would text a buddy and go, "All right, I've
What's
been
it
out here
looking
for 3 or 4 days. What's it looking like?" Because weather's dependable about 3 days out,
Yeah.
at the max. Once you start getting into the fourth day, things are liable to change. But yeah, now with Starlink and Windy, with those two items, I don't know what's going to happen to a lot of other cruisers or new cruisers when they get into it and think that this is just normal. And so I think that a lot of the new people may get into a comfort zone with this new technology. I don't necessarily think that they're going to get in trouble with it. It's just, I don't know how the newer generation coming into this that didn't do it before there was communication, right? Like when you went
Yeah.
over the horizon, that's it. You're on your own. You know,
Yeah.
and that's just not the way it is now with the way that we're all connected. But it's a great thing.
Yeah.
That Windy, the Windy and Starlink edition is just freaking awesome. You can go to the current section and go through the Gulf Stream, and you can stay right in the middle of the Gulf Stream. I mean, you can dial it in, and then coming from New England to Bermuda, you have to cross the Gulf Stream, and that's where it turns to head to Europe. So south of Long Island, about 150 to 250 miles, somewhere right in there, is where the Gulf Stream is. Well, it'll have eddies that spin off of it. It'll have, you know, downward running current, you know. So if you can pick your way through there, you may get a 3 or 4 knot boost for a day or two just by
Yeah.
playing your cards right and being able to really pinpoint where you're at just by using the app. And so, you know, show my location on this map, and it puts you right there in the Gulf Stream, and you know when you're easing off the edge or going back to the middle, or you can keep
Yeah,
going.
it's
So we've only
priceless.
had that for a few years. Yeah, it really was. It's $600 for equipment. I mean, realistic, you know, for the regular stuff that I have, right?
For
Not
the
the Windy
dish and all
version.
that.
Yeah, for the dish and all that, $600. That's
That's
the
free.
cheapest
I'm
thing
in
on
Europe.
my boat.
You don't have to pay for it in Europe
Even better.
now.
See?
No, you just pay. I pay $69 a month, and then if you go offshore, you need to buy the
Yeah,
gigs.
you
But
turn on the stuff.
yeah, the equipment was free. It's they've got the I think they're obviously trying to push it in Europe. Like if you sail offshore in the Mediterranean now, I'd say 1 out of 2 or 3 nights, you're definitely going to see Starlink satellites going up, which is awesome watching them. Like it's fantastic. But yeah, they're really pushing it over here, which is great because it's faster than all the other internet.
Oh man, it's, I mean, I can't even imagine these sat navs and super yacht internet services that have been, you know, their internet bill be 20 grand a month, right? You know, for a
Yeah.
normal super yacht. And that's just what has been the industry standard and been normal for them.
Yeah, and it was
And
rubbish
now,
internet.
yeah, and it wasn't that great. But now they can just be connected all the time, you know, and it's just unbelievable speeds. I mean, I've been in IT and technology my whole life, and then doing a speed test between Bermuda and the Caribbean and getting like 180 down, you know, 180.
That's crazy.
I was like, where is it down from? You know, you can't, like, it's up there
Where is
somewhere,
it?
right? Up there through the clouds. But yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, we can stream Netflix, you know, we're just sailing along streaming Netflix. You know, a lot of people
No,
want to get out here and avoid all that stuff, but I still like my creature comforts. So,
I like Star Trek, mate, like on loop. So yeah, I'd
oh,
really
yeah,
appreciate
okay.
Netflix offshore.
Yeah.
I'll
So
have to put mine
you
on.
probably do are interested in all the SpaceX stuff and the starships and things
Oh, I
like
love it,
that
mate.
too. Yeah, me too, man. I'm in it. I want to see these big things. And I think a lot of it comes from the semi-explorer mentality that most sailors are. You know, the last launch that they had, the whole boat was watching it on the big screen over here with Taft in, and here's the SpaceX YouTube channel, and there they go launching it, and then the
You know,
thing
it's funny
flew
watching
over
that.
us. Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Well, it came over Puerto Rico, right? And it was tumbling through the air, right? The Starship, after they lost contact with it and everything. So we saw something in the sky for a little while, but we didn't even know what it was. And later come to find out it was the Starship burning up. But there was a photographer in Puerto Rico that actually got a picture of it.
Oh, no way. Yeah, that was interesting, that. I think what's so interesting is being able to just watch, like, live stream someone lose $1 billion, like, just with the click of a finger and be, oh, it's okay, we'll do another one.
It's like
It's crazy. More than a
we're not
billion, I
gonna
think.
we're not gonna learn how to do it until we do it. That's
Yeah,
kind of
which.
like the Captain Ron thing, you know. It's like it's not gonna happen until you're out
Yeah,
there,
it's true.
right? You know,
Yeah,
it's
you do
like,
need, you have to
yeah,
practice eventually. You can't just theorize on
if
these
it's,
things.
yeah, exactly, if it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen out there. That's the line.
Yeah. No,
But
I'm
yeah,
obsessed with all that stuff. When, to be honest, when I go offshore, it's my excuse to just like stare at stars for like days and days on end and
Oh
wonder what the hell's out
man,
there.
I tell you, I've found more peace within myself in the last 10 years doing these big trips and being able to sit under the stars and just see the milk. I have guys that have been on, never seen the Milky Way, never seen anything, you know, like we see as sailors when you're offshore, and you get just that, you know, there's a certain temperature that is a little cooler. It gets rid of all the haze and the humidity. If you can get, and I probably only get maybe 2 or 3 nights a year like this, but the cool, crisp night where stars come out of the water.
Yeah.
So they, you don't have the haze right on this, you know, so as they're coming up kind of out of the sky, you can literally see stars rise out of the water and you feel like you're in this like giant planetarium,
I
you know,
know.
with the little, the dots in the ceiling back when you were a kid and would go through a planetarium for school. It's real. I mean, it's horizon to horizon on these dark nights with no moon. You know, the moon's a double-edged sword. Great, great for sailing and not getting run over. Terrible for
Then you can't see
stargazing, right?
anything.
You can't see anything with a
Yeah,
full moon. I'm like, man, just put the moon away. But
brilliant. Yeah,
yeah,
just whilst I'm looking up.
yeah. I mean, yeah, the moon and the stars and stuff. And if you got Star Trek on loop, then you definitely like the SpaceX stuff just as much as I do.
Oh, I love it, mate. Like, I remember the first time we saw one when we were offshore. Obviously, incredibly disappointed we weren't being invaders. That was the first hope when you see these lines of things going through the sky. You're like, finally, they're going to fix the place.
So,
But it's awesome.
I was in 2019. This is before Starlink, but during their whatever initial phase that nobody really knew about. And so we're off of the Canaries and we're sailing toward the Caribbean. And it's in December or something, you know, normal after hurricane season. Everybody comes over to the playground, and we started to see. And like my mate that was on the trip said, hey, come take a look at this, because he didn't quite know what it was. And we had these lights like popping out of the water, you know, exactly spaced apart, right? And they went up all the way over our heads and back in the water on the other side. And there ended up being like 42 of them. And it's a really eerie feeling when you have
That doesn't
no
sound
idea
like
what this is.
Starlink.
No, it was a so it was a Starlink train. Right. So you've heard of
Right.
Starlink trains where they're in line after they launch before they go to whatever position they're supposed to go into. So
Yeah,
this was
but not
back when they
from
had.
like one side of the water to the other. Or do you mean just
Yeah.
like across the sky?
Yeah. All no, all because they had lights on at the time. So when they
Yeah.
originally they had lights all the way across from one edge of the water all the way across the sky. All, I
No
don't mean
way.
in the water, like out of the water, from our perception for them coming
Ah,
over the
right. I
horizon,
thought you
right?
meant like yeah, they
Yeah,
were coming out
I
of
meant
the coming out of the
right.
water.
No, like you raise a mountain, like you raise an island out of the
Yeah,
water, right? So it comes up from the horizon, and these things were perfectly spaced out. And I said, well, either somebody's launching missiles, and a bunch of them, but it for the path it was like Brazil to Europe, and we were way out. And I said, well, it's got to
unlikely
be
attack.
it's in space, so it's probably satellite something. And then we still had weeks. We still had several weeks out there. And so we kind of get back and we kind of forget about it. And then all of a sudden we start seeing, the first Starlink launches. And that was what it
What they
was
look
we
like.
one of the first Starlink kind of trains that anybody had seen was us way out in the Atlantic. And
That
it
would have
was
been
an
really
interesting
cool.
moment, not knowing what it was. But
I was
yeah,
going to
now we
say, yeah, not knowing what that was and seeing it, you would legit be like, this is an otherworldly phenomenon
Yeah,
going on here.
what the hell is going on, right? But now all that stuff, now we got stuff floating around. They can't get things to space fast enough. You know, they're just launching stuff every day.
The next big business, mate. You know, like he's I mean, he's done a couple of pretty impressive things that I can honestly see just having great effect on people's day-to-day lives. Like the Starlink is
Day-to-day
definitely
lives.
one of them, but the space and based, you know, like the logistics business that is set up for the universe in a
Yeah,
way, you know,
I
it's
mean,
where that's
exactly.
going is going to be infinite. Like, gosh, you know, it's going to basically be Maersk but going to Mars and Jupiter or wherever. That's like good. That's
Yeah,
his business.
wherever you want to go, the sky is not the limit anymore, right?
Yeah.
There's more sky past that sky. But
Yeah.
like we said, as sailors, we do find these things interesting because, it's exploration and we're kind of venturing into new waters. And that's the whole Star Trek announcement at the beginning.
Yeah.
I forget the tagline for Star Trek, but it was like something
There's been
very,
a few.
Yeah, there's been a few right over the
It's
years,
morphed
but
over the years since the 60s as well.
and some of those were the better ones. I like the real human-like aliens with the green heads that they used to have a long time ago in the 60s and 70s on those space shows.
Oh, just the face paint, and that
Yeah, right. Just that, yeah, you know it's an
was
alien because all aliens are green. You know,
They all
that's how
speak
we knew they
perfect
were
English,
aliens.
also, strangely.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, mate, let's call it there, because I could talk to you all night, but my bladder
Yeah,
won't be
no
able to
kidding.
last the full time. So, where should people go to check out these passages? You've got like a web address we can send
Yeah,
them to.
so Libra's website is saillibra.com. Super easy to get to. You know, we also have a poorly managed Instagram and Facebook page that I try to get stuff on every now and then to share some of these things after I've been in the build, you know, working on stuff, right? So, you know, we're on Facebook and Instagram and things like that. But yeah, they can visit us at the website, kind of check out our passages. And for this season, I'm not sure 100%, just with some family logistics, may end up actually being back in New England where I've been since COVID. So it's just something for people to check out on the website because I'm sure it'll be live by the time that this gets out and they can
Nice.
take a look at it. So yeah, saillibra.com. We'd love to have them. We take all kinds from beginners to I've already owned a boat and I just want to get my fix. You know, that's the thing.
Cracking, mate. Right, that was a nice chat.